Hello, Maria.
So basically, I get presentation, right? Okay, thank you. What's that? All right, so the question that was asked was in this week's parsha, Vayeshev. Question was, which says, Vayevo Shema, so Rashi quotes Chazal, that they say that it's a Makam Amuchon Lepronius. So what does that mean? Makam, so Rechavim, by the time of Rechavim, you should have known it's a Makam Amuchon Lepronius, so don't go there. I mean, and obviously it's against Kala Terakula, that type of an idea, to say that a Makam is Gorim, is a lot of Zor, basically. You'd be over in Issa. A person who believes such a thing, you'd be over in Issa Deraisa. So it can't be. What do Chazal mean by that? What do Chazal mean by that? Okay. And then Marshall mentioned the Rambam. The Rambam in Beis Abchira, Perek Beis, Halacha Beis, where the Rambam sets aside a special halacha, where he says, Meseres Biyad HaKol, the Makam Shebanu Bo David, is the same place that Avram built the Mizbeach, and Yakedes Yitzchak was there, and Noach was there when he got on the table, and Adam and Cain and Hevel Makers was over there, and also Adam Arishon was Makrev over there, and he was even created from that spot. I mean, it was a nice drush, it doesn't belong in the Yad HaChazaka. What's something to discuss in the Maran Avochim? Why does Ram has it as a part of the halachic system of the Yad, the special halacha? The answer really is, you know, you have to understand, see, this is no different really than the concept of, let's say, Tisha B'Av. So you say five things happened on Tisha B'Av, right? I mean, the first base of Mikdash, second base of Mikdash, and you say it's a Zman, which is it's a Zman of Peronius, and same idea, Bein Amtzorim. It's the Yom itself, Tisha B'Av, is bad. I mean, it's time of Tzorah, time of Tzoras, right? Tzoras Nich, Tzoras Harbi Nich Paluba, right? So what does that mean? So we have a choice. You can either say it's coincidental, not a coincidence, or else you can say it was Ashgacha. I'll say it was Ashgacha. It would seem from the Rambam and from Chazal that it wasn't coincidental. In other words, the fact that the Migdash was destroyed and it was on that day, was not, and that was the day of Meraglim, that was not coincidental, that was Ashgacha. That's number one. Well, you see, the way the Ashgacha works, I mean, that is, I think, a big Yisod in Yahadis, that the way the Ashgacha works is, the Ashgacha works in a way, I mean, that's Chazdei HaMakom, Chesed Hashem, that the Ashgacha works in a way that it gives a person certain situations to bring to their mind certain ideas. I mean, Eretz Yisrael, the whole idea of Eretz Yisrael. Kumis Alach Baretz, La'orko, La'rochba, Avram Avinu, Yitzchak could never leave Eretz Yisrael, Yaakov Avinu. I mean, what is the whole idea? The whole idea is it's the Eretz Avos. Zacharti Brisis, Brisi Avos, Brisi Yisrael, V'Oretz Eskar. It's the Oretz has to be tied to these personalities. And that's really the whole purpose of Eretz Yisrael. Kedusha Eretz is the halacha Kedusha, and also philosophically that the makom reminds you of these personalities. That's what Yahadus differs, and I mentioned this many times, from any other system in that it combines philosophy with the dynamics of human psychology. And that's what's unique about it. So no other system like that. So what Yahadus does is, what Torah does is, that it gives you a makom, and you see him, like you see even today, I mean, you see that it can't give back. It's Eretz Avos. Can't give back. It's an attachment, an emotional attachment. So, it's true, I mean, you know, we have to use chokhmah, not emotions, but the emotional attachment is important. It's important as well. I mean, you know, in a bezdin, you have to have the right, you want people that have emotions of rachmanas. Emotions have to, you know, man can't, man cannot be, doesn't have total control over his mind to be objective. I mean, so you have to use your intelligence to guide certain emotions. You can't take shochad, no matter how perfected you are, the biggest tzaddik in the world. If you take one dime of shochad, that's the end of it. You cannot say, God is mayor, that you will not be given a just verdict. Impossible to be totally objective. That's it. So certain limits that we have because of certain emotions. So Yahadus always tries to work with the emotions in a way that it's beneficial and drives a person towards perfection. That's all concept of Eretz Yisrael, the Eretz of the Avos. So there's certain places And certain zmanim are designated. Sometimes it's designated through halacha. Like, for instance, everybody knows tshuva is a mitzvah constantly. You can't really perfect yourself without tshuva. It has to be done on a daily basis, constantly. A person that's a Talmud Chacham is always rethinking. He does something, goes something, he's constantly replaying what happened to check, to see, did he sway this way, that way. I mean, it's a constant process. It should be a part of a person's life. Tshuva should be a part of a person's life. But nevertheless, you have a seres mei tshuva, means a zman that's specifically designated for tshuva. Difference. It has to be a certain... Emotionally, a person can't have... Every day is the same. You really can't make any major strides. Sometimes you need a system, and the system demands that now you direct your attention to this quality, this type of institution of perfection. That's Seres Mei Tshuva, or Shoni and Kippur. No? So Yahadis, I mean... The Moadim, you can't have Moadim every day. I mean, it'd be not very nice. Chetzel Hashem, Chetzel Hashem, Shabbos, Kul Hashem. Can't be every day. It has to be, that's the nature of man. It has to work within the man, with human nature. So the same thing is true with Makom and Zman. The Torah enlisted Makom and Zman and used it to direct the focus of a person's attention on certain ideas. So really... That's the whole idea of Bein Amtzarim, of the idea of Tisha B'Av. It means that there was Ashgacha, that these events should take place on this day, because when you study the events, you'll see that there really is a relationship between the Chet and the Meraglim and the Churban HaBayis. And because it's on one time, so if it would be dispersed throughout the year, there's no connection, so we wouldn't have the opportunity to really direct our emotions to it. So Yahadus really enlists the aid of the emotions in a rational way, directed towards chachma and towards analysis. So the same thing is true with regard to certain places. That Shechem was a place that the Ashgacha designated that should remind people when they see Shechem, it should remind them of the events of Shechem, so that it should be like a limud musar. With regard to those events, the Ashgacha saw fit that the events in Shechem, those events, were events that didn't just happen once, not isolated phenomena, but those events have a universal character, and the Am should never forget that, those events, and should always relive them and reanalyze them if they don't want to suffer the consequences of what happened there in the past. So sometimes the halacha does it, like in Yom Tovim. Sometimes the Ashgacha does it. The Ashgacha does it with regard to Zman and with regard to Makom. And with regard to Makom, you have the same thing. Sometimes it's the halacha does it, which is like the Beis HaMikdash. The halacha does it, halacha designates. Sometimes the Ashgacha designates. It's an interesting thing. But that's the whole Yisod of Yahadus, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ashgacha is with the Am. It means that's the way it's expressed. It's expressed by certain signs, certain events that direct the attention of the people so that they can be chozer b'tshuva and perfect themselves. Our concept of Ashgachas Hashem is very small when it comes to the area of pleasure and happiness. It doesn't really work that way. I mean, you see Parshas Vayishlach. Parshas Vayishlach, so you see, you're never going to be a bigger tzaddik than Yaakov Avinu. I mean, okay, in Yaakov Avinu, he finally made the money from Lavan Arami. What's the next thing he had? And the encounter Esav is frightened for his life. He just got out of one tzara. Then what happened after that? The next thing was what? But after, before that. Then after Lavan Arami made the money, after Esav, then... Shem, his daughter is raped, then Rachel dies, right? That was the wife that he really loved. Rachel, she dies, then he loses his favorite son. I mean, one event after another, one sorry after another. We do not maintain the Ashgacha will protect the person in terms of what everybody's looking for. But we maintain the Ashgacha works insofar as giving man the ability to have knowledge and perfection. That's where the Ashgacha is active. It's a different concept of Ashgachas Hashem. It's a whole different idea and people think. There's where we see the Ashgacha, is a Tarmi Sinai. I mean, that's the biggest event of the Ashgacha. And so far as God relates to man, he relates to man essentially in one way, in directing him and giving him the ability to have Chachma, to live a life of Chachma, to remind him to direct his energies to the proper lifestyle. In terms of protecting him from untoward events, that we don't say. The Torah does not say that if you'll be a tzaddik, you'll be protected from events in life that are tragic. The Torah doesn't give such a picture. And it's a different concept completely. Our concept completely different concept of the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and man. So that's really the pshat in the Chazal. And the Rambam in Karbonis is saying the same idea, basically. That this is the Mesoras Biyadenu, means to say that the concept, the essence of Migdash is Kapar. That's the essence of Migdash. The Kapar, it says, the Makam from which he was created was Makam Kaparasa. What does it mean? It means it's a whole different philosophy. It means to say that man is, his essence is chait. The only way he can make it is through tshuva. That's it, through kapara. He's essentially a being that's created to stumble. He's always going to stumble. Stumbling is part of his nature. If you think that man can be, man can live in a way that he can live a perfect life, you know, like the Lahavd Lagayimav, idea of a saint, this type of thing, then you're totally mistaken about human nature. Man is a stumbler, and the only way he has is he finds his salvation is through kapara, through tshuva and kapara. That's really the essence of Adam. That's what the Rambam means over there. It means to say the reason why the Rambam includes it in the Yad is because if he includes it in the Yad, it means one thing. It means that if you understand the structures, the halachic structures, you'll see they all tie in to this idea. They're related. They touch upon. See, halacha has its own method of working, its own unique method. There's nothing like halacha. So it's a unique system. It's very technical, very logical, but somehow or other it dips into the area of philosophy. It cuts into it in its own way. That's why the Rambam has it in the Yad. As in the Yad, it means to say that Yisod, you're going to find halachas are revolving around that philosophical principle. Not just philosophy, but the halachas rooted the structures of Karbonis and Mizbeach, and it's closely tied to it. Of course, halacha is purely logical, and it's a purely logical structure, but nevertheless, the halacha oftentimes dips into the philosophy in Hilchos Shabbos. Hilchos Shabbos is Lametes Malachas. Lametes Malachas is very technical. You have to understand very abstract technical activities. But the concept that the Torah never asked work on Shabbos in the common sense, physical work, never asked it, shows you that it's a different idea. It means that it's technological progress is what's awesome. The Torah Malachas are structured very logically, but they're related to a philosophical principle. That means to say that Shabbos, the man really has two. There are two aspects to man. One is the purely rational and the area of chachma. The other is his ability, his technological ability. Okay, so to master his surroundings. The Shabbos is a day in which there's a cessation of that aspect of man. That's really the idea, and that's why it's lametas melacha. So halacha is very technical, but halacha really is related to philosophy in its own way. It's a unique way. A person has to be lametas to be able to appreciate it. But that's the way it works, yes. That's part of Tzelem Olakim, that he could translate ideas into the practical. We spoke about that this week, you know, that the that some people are it'll be similar to the idea of a person that's a lamdan and a posek. I mean, in halacha you'd have the same kind of a thing. Parallel, okay? That the posek has to be very good at the practical. You see? Lamdan is purely theoretical. So I mentioned that the Rav said that the You could have a person that's very good as a London, but he's not good. And it's part of the genius of Reb Moshe Zatzal is that the fact that he analyzes the facts of the case. I mean, that's no oversights. You know, he's very a person in big London. You know, listens to the show. He doesn't. What about this? He doesn't know this. He's not involved in the particulars. Demands a certain kind. It's a different kind of chachma. The same thing is true with man, with regard to the world. I mean, they're abstract thinkers that they can't really do the practical. And then you have people that are very good at translating ideas into practical terms. It's a different type of a skill. Of course, it's part of Talmud Kim, but it's a different aspect of man. It means to say that a person should have. It means during that time, a person should have an awareness of that idea. And that's expressed in the fact that he's mamayet and masan matan. There are certain things that he does in order to make him aware of those ideas that he should look into the situation and because of a tshuva and try to understand what the nature of the tragedy is. That's what it means. It's an interesting thing to see whether there's one idea that weaves through all those events or whether they're separate universals. I mean. There's reason to suspect that there's a relationship between the events. Yeah. That's good. I mean, he's saying that when Chazal say that Avram Bukh was back there because Al Shem Arsid, it means to say that they should have the opportunity when they came there to think about Avram Avinu because that was Mark Mazbeach. So therefore, they could be Mahar B'tshuva. That's a good idea, yeah. What Chazal mean by the first pshat, which is that he cried when he saw, he asked me a different question altogether. Now, when he cried when he saw Rachel, So Chazal says because he didn't have anything to give her. It means to say, apparently, what Chazal is saying is that he felt he himself was poor. That didn't bother him to tolerate it. But for her, he became upset. Because he felt that why should she have to enter a situation of marriage with such financial insecurities? Himself, he didn't care, but he saw her that she has to live this way. So Vayisas Kol Vayevk, that was an unbelievable shows you the level of Yaakov Avinu. I mean, himself he didn't care about, but he saw her that she's going to have to start off life this way. So it bothered him. So he cried. That's the first part. I mean, that's the godless of the Yaakov Avinu. He lost his money, okay, but for her, he was upset. What? The method of drush is something which most people just don't understand. And they can't understand. Rambam will say this is the plain shot, and then he'll say, oh, but the Midrash is like this, and exactly the opposite. Many times they're mutually exclusive. So I explained that last week. I said that there's one interpretation of the event, but then there's a chachmas akasev that you could take an event, and even though that might not be the right interpretation, but logically there's a correlation between two events. The Torah uses that opportunity also to teach you an idea. All right, so that's the Yisod. So this pasuk, I mean, could very well be that drasha could be based upon that concept. In other words, when it says Vayishak Yaakov LeRachel, Vayisas Kol Vayevk, so the question is, why did the Torah have to record Vayishak Yaakov LeRachel? Fine, okay. So he felt the closeness, even though he didn't know her. It meant that he was really concerned. His main idea was to create Shiftei Kor, and therefore he knew that she would be the appropriate one. Okay, fine. But what's Vayisas Kol Avayev? What do you have to record that for? The Torah doesn't record every event. There's no reason to record Vayisas Kol Avayev. What's the purpose of that? So one pshat is, so it has to be some kind of a limud. It has to be based on some kind of a limit. It has to be a reason for the mikra. It's a chachmas akasa. So one, the first pshat is it wants to teach you an idea of the godless of Yaakov Avinu in terms of how he wasn't concerned about himself, he was concerned about her. That's a nice pshat. But the other pshat is vayisas kolo vayef. It means to say that the pasuk means to say that the pasuk records that because the pasuk means to say that it was a relationship that would never really, would reach its fulfillment, because she really she died early, and she really died very young, and there was a tragic aspect to the relationship. So that's why the Torah records. In other words, Vayisas Kolo Vayev has to be understood in two ways. He cried. A person sometimes cries out of joy. I mean, it's a certain kind of an emotion. But why did the Torah record it? That's the question. According to the pshat that says Vayisas Kolo Vayev, that it had to do with the fact that that she would die in tragically before time, and she wouldn't be nichnasim alakvura. What the Torah is trying to point out to you is that this relationship, from its outset, was destined never to be fulfilled. It wants to tell you that idea. That's basically that's why it records it. So, as I said last week, when you learn the drasha, you have to know what the drasha is saying. Is the drasha really saying that that's the reason the event took place, or the drasha is saying why it's being recorded and why it's being placed in its specific position to teach you another idea? You understand? That would explain the drasha. Okay.
Yeah.
As basically, that Rashi is the same idea that that Yaakov Avinu knew that Yosef. It's an interesting thing. I mean, you see a very interesting thing. I mean, among the Yavos and the Shvatim, you know, had a lot of things they didn't discuss. You know, till certain times, they didn't hold from discussing everything. You know, I mean, Yaakov Avinu knew that Yosef probably in the back of his mind held it against him. And they held it against him, why didn't he take Rachel and bring her into Eretz Yisrael? But he never mentioned it before. Apparently, there's no chiyuv. I mean, there's no chiyuv to discuss every point and to undo everything that another person, every suspicion a person has against you. And I'm okay to do that. I mean, if there's a reason for it, yes. And if not, you don't have to. Yaakov Avinu does not have a chiyuv to explain himself. To Yosef, and if he knew, even though he knew in the back of his mind that Yosef HaTzadik probably had a hearer of complaint, but that's something that Yosef has to handle. That's it. You're not mechuyev to remove every suspicion that everybody has about you. There's a certain rights that you have to make decisions, and if somebody is suspect of whether you're just or not, that's their problem. They didn't just discuss everything because there's a certain system over here. So, but when he asked him to do kvura for him, so there already he removed the suspicion, because he knew that this can interfere, and he knew that Yosef was up against a very difficult situation, getting through to Paro to allow him to do that, because they wanted him buried over there in Mitzrayim. So he knew it was going to be a very difficult thing. And if there's any emotion that's tied to an excuse to get out of it, he's endangering the whole venture. So there he said, that's when he explained himself. Then he saw fit, then he says, now it's necessary to explain. It's not a matter of his problem, you know, in handling his perfection. Now it was a problem of Yaakov himself. So there, that's when he explained it. So he said it was really al pi hashgacha. Actually, he would have buried her in Maaros HaMachpelah. Actually, from Beis Lechem to Maaros HaMachpelah is how far? It's not that far. Not really that far. Oh yeah, not that far. So he says, why didn't he do it? He says because he says Shetela Ezra Levanel Kishiyidlo Son Ruzadon. So again, I mean that's the principle we mentioned before. That the Ashgacha saw that, you see, that was al pi dibur, so it was Ashgacha. So the Ashgacha saw fit to make use of there's halachic and Ashgachic geography. I mean, it makes use of makom, of place, and that's why Rachel was buried over there. That was the concept. That was the idea. Okay, Rachel Vakal Banel. That's the concept. Again, it's the same idea. Yeah. Apparently, it's important. It's important for the Torah. I mean, it's a good point you mentioned. Why? So, according to the Apshat, so what's the purpose of mentioning? So, again, what's the purpose of mentioning? Apparently, it's important the Torah. It's important the Torah wanted the reader to realize this idea when they read the pasuk. That concept, that's an important concept for a person to know in life. That a person has to be aware that many times a person is overcome with emotion about situations, and they draw conclusions about the future, and they base their life on these fantasies. No, that's the way it is. A person should not attach fantasy to an event and project what's going to be. You see, by Yaakov Avinu, his biggest tzaddik, Yaakov Avinu. And nevertheless, and this is with Rachel, it wasn't going to work out. The way he wanted it, or the way a person would in that situation would expect, would have expectations for. That's an important lingua that a person should know that in life. Shouldn't attach illusion and fantasy to their personal lives, to their personal situations. You don't know. Yeah, he wanted it. He loved her very much. He really wanted to divorce Leah. Wanted to get rid of it. He didn't want it. But this doesn't maintain that you shouldn't want it. You have to try for it, but you have to realize at the same time that you may have to withdraw. It's a unique kind of philosophy. Different kind of philosophy. Very hard. Well, it's difficult. Somebody wanted to put it very well. An outsider, really, and explain the philosophy. So they said to me, this philosophy is very difficult because it doesn't fit into any groove. And that's precisely why it is difficult. Because if you tell a guy, okay, so give up on the romantic emotion, that fits into a groove. There is a certain, you have an ascetic, a super ego and go into that type of mode. That is mode. This is no mode. Yes, a person should look forward to the future, to try to do everything they can to secure it. Simultaneously, a person has to know that sometimes, you have to accept reality and that's it. It's a different kind of system, different kind of perfected individual. It's an individual that just lives according to the only thing he could be attached to. The only thing he could be attached to only one thing, and that is living according to Chachma. That's the only thing. That's the only absolute. That's really what Kehelis shows. Every single life is in contradiction. There's only one life that's not in contradiction. As you attach yourself to anything that's physical, there's always the moment of joy, the moment of the greatest elation, the mind always thinks of the opposite. Well, what if this happens and this happens? See, that's the way man is. So now you have to close off that part of the mind. So you're in conflict. Conflict, you can't be happy. So that's the end of it. Every single lifestyle can be destroyed the way Kehelis does with that one principle. Except one. And that is the life of Chachma. So you ask me, say, but whatever, Chacham Rachman Islam gets a stroke and he can't think. Yeah, but I don't mean that a person is attached to the fact that he's a thinker. I mean, he's attached to living a life of Chachma. So whatever happens, Chachma dictates now to this. His life is attached to living life chachma. That's the only thing that there's no contradiction to. The only lifestyle is no contradiction to. Eli asked the question, why does it express itself in terms of Einu Nechnas Melech Furo? So I think the reason is because even if there's a tragic life and if one is cut short, but if they're buried together, that sort of people feel, well, they're buried together, it's together. So it wants to show, not only does she have a tragic life, she wasn't even nichnasim olakvura. So that really, the fact that she's not nichnasim olakvura is like a concrete, reflection of the fact that it didn't really, if it's nichnasim olakvura, she died, many years later, so she died younger, but they're both together. So that was really, from Rhea's perspective. Right, that's correct.
The question is, what does Rashi mean when it says "V'hoyu la'osos"? So Rashi says, "Quotes a Chazal, 'Kashe ha'ma'olos lokin simin rohu la'olam.' It's a bad sign for the world. Shenema me'osos ha'shamayim al techoto. Don't be afraid of the signs of the heavens. Truth. I mean, so what does that mean? First, to take it in a literal sense is obviously absurd, because we know very well that the Lakia Samaros eclipses are a result of natural law, astronomical phenomena, and the Gemara states clearly, in Avodah Zarah Gemara states, that Adam HaRishon, when he first saw the sun setting, he was frightened. He thought maybe it was an onus, and then he saw the next morning the sun came back. He said, Derech HaOlam was there. And the same thing with the waning seasons. He first was upset, and then later he realizes Derech HaOlam. Once he saw it was Derech HaOlam, he realized it's not Hashgacha, and has nothing to do with his chait. He accepted, so you see that Adam HaRishon, of primary importance, and the Gemara says in contradistinction to Adam HaRishon, the Goyim made a whole, their holiday that comes out on December 25th is based on the pagan holiday of the winter solstice to celebrate the return of the sun. This is a primitive thing, and Chazal say that Adam HaRishon recognized the natural law, but the Goyim didn't. They made a whole religion out of it, and that's pure Avodah Zarah. So you see that in Yahadus, the basis of Yahadus is recognition of the natural law. If you don't recognize natural law, then you're prone to Avodah Zarah. As a matter of fact, I mean, in the Torah, immediately when the Torah gives you an account of the creation, the Torah removes any mystical association with the heavenly bodies constantly. In Devarim, which says, when Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Fentiso einecho l'shamayimo v'ro'iso ha'shemesh v'yoreach v'kochovim v'yishtachaviso lam," he says, "Asher cholak ad Hashem." So it's a natural phenomena. I mean, that's the basis of Yahadus. Yahadus is the only religion, historically, the only group of people that did not have astrology is Yahadus. It's Judaism. There's no other religion in the world. When you go back, not go back too far, I mean, every one of them always has astrology. And Yahadus is totally devoid of it. The only system that's totally devoid of it. So you can always tell. Like the Goyim, you know, when they try to imitate the Christians, try to imitate the Torah. And, you know, the Rambam says that Christianity calls the monkey religion. The monkey imitates because they try to make up their own. You have a Torah, we have one. It is an imitator who doesn't understand what he's imitating is never going to get it accurately. So you'll notice right away when they say. When their hero was born, right away they say, the star was this, you see? You'll never find the Torah such a thing. Moshe Rabbeinu was the Adon Anavim. Doesn't mention anywhere when he was born, the star or this, nothing. That's totally devoid. The Torah is devoid of all this kind of primitivism. It's the most amazing thing about the Torah. And you see, immediately when the Torah starts off, Yehi Me'oris B'Kiya HaShemayim, the Torah says, well, why? La'av Do Ben Yovein Eloi Lo. Okay? Lahor al Arts. Practical. Torah makes an open statement right in the beginning that these things are all creations of God in order that man should be able to function properly. So how could Rashi suddenly introduce an idea which is completely against everything that the Torah says openly? I mean, and not only what the Torah says, but the whole philosophy of Yahadus. Okay? Whole Hashkafas of Yahadus. And you say, and it doesn't make any sense. And I told you that, I told you many times, when people resort today to the Kabbalists, they want to say that Ramban was a Kabbalist. Ramban was nothing. What they think, what they're talking about Kabbalah is primitivism. Ramban was a Chacham Gadol, and Ramban would be the first one to say that when you see something scientifically proven, that's it. There's no question about it. That's what he says about the rainbow. So in other places, many other places, anytime he says something that we know is not true, it's because he's basing himself on the science of the times, which is incorrect, and he simply couldn't know beyond his time. But anything that's proven, when you have this, you never. Balatasis, everybody. And what your eyes see, that's it. I mean, it's the whole concept of Matan Torah. So we know very well that Lakiyas HaMa'oros, eclipses, is nothing more than a natural phenomenon. There's nothing mystical about it. And anyone that believes otherwise is going against the very premise of Kol HaTorah Kula, which is that what your mind sees and understands as being correct is what you go by. So it's an impossibility. So what does it mean by Lakiya Samaras? As a matter of fact, even stranger is the pasuk that Rashi quotes from Yirmiyahu. Because what is the pasuk from Yirmiyahu? You get me, Yirmiyahu? Yeah, by the way, I mean just to elaborate a little further, I mean, this is something very interesting recently from the Rashbah. The Rashbah says, you know, there was a Mashiach, so-called Mashiach in this time, you know, claimed Mashiach. So he said, the Rashbah said that it was unfortunate because there was a big Baal Halacha that followed that Mashiach. And the Rashbah even recognized his level in Halacha in one of his tshuvas. But the Rashbah was very upset about it, and the Rashbah said that Klal Yisrael is emes, and from Avram Yitzchak, now that everything is emes, and we're the descendants of people that searched and looked for emes, and our whole method is emes. And he said, and Klal Yisrael is such that even when they see things that appear like osos and mofsim, they're not impressed, and they're chokev adorish, amazing Rashbah, and they're chokev adorish, and they do not believe things. They do not believe things, even though the things appear, in other words, have an emotional impact, they will not believe it. And he says, and they'd rather be in gullus and suffer and be so verily all of the gullus than to believe these false kind of Mashiachim. It's an amazing Rashbah. I think today, I'll get it for you. I get it for you. Yeah, I'll show it to you. Unbelievable. And what does he bring as a raya? He brings a fantastic raya. Yeah, Gernis and Rashbah. He brings a raya from the Pasuk. Because says Moshe Rabbeinu said to God, he said, what was the first thing he said? V'heim lo ya'aminu bi. Right? That's what he said. He says, now why did Moshe Rabbeinu say that? Because he knew that even the Jews at that time are not going to accept it, because they're chachamim and they're going to be chok evadarish. He says that was the mesorah they had from Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, and they would not accept. This is what Rashbah says. Now the Rashbah was a mekubal, because Ramban was his rebbe. Okay, the Ramban was his rebbe, and he was a true mekubal. What I want to show you is that idea that they use today. You have Makubal, they are talking not about Makubal, they're talking about stupid idiocy. Makokal is correct.
The Kabbalah, the Ramban, has
nothing to do with what they use. They try to make it, they try to hang to hang their head on this thing in order to save their lives. But basically, it's a total distortion and absolute misrepresentation.
But you got a good point.
In Yirmiyahu, the pasuk Rashi quotes in Yirmiyahu is a beautiful pasuk, and he says, "Shimu es adovar shadibar Hashem aleichem beis Yisrael, kol ma Hashem." Just listen to the pasuk: "El derech hagoyim al tilmadu." Don't learn the ways of the goyim. And next, "Umeosos hashamayim al techato." Don't be afraid of the signs of the heavens. And then he continues. Because the goyim are afraid of these things. Exactly, what is he saying? If anybody has a brain, I mean, you see immediately what he's saying is that this is all nonsense. And what does he say? The next pasuk, ki chukos ha'amim hevelu. Hevel. Okay? Why? Ki eitz miyar krosso masi yedei chorosh b'matzoi. Well, you can see the way they do things. And they take something and then they project some kind of mystical power. Open in the pasuk. What is the pasuk telling you? Pshuto shel mikra. It's telling you the biggest danger is when you start ascribing powers to the heavens. Okay, so what Rashi quotes, when you look at the Navi, is exactly the opposite. Okay? Not that there's any powers there, but it's Hevelhu. Rashi is quoting that pasuk. If that pasuk would say that Yirmiyahu was saying, don't be afraid of signs of the heavens because God is going to protect you from these evils, but there really is something there, So then he would never have said, when he explains it, Ki chukos amim hevel ho. Hevel means it's nonsensical. It's worthless. It's empty. You know what I mean? He would have said, no, it's not empty. They're saying something's very true. But God is going to protect it. So exactly the opposite. It says it's absolute hevel. And shtus of a person believes such a thing. The opposite of what Rashi says. But I'm telling you, kol haTorah kula is against all this kind of a thing. So we have to. What did the Chazal mean? Okay, what did the Chazal mean of it? Well, I'll tell you what I think. I mean, if you take a look at the previous Rashi, he says Yehi Ma'oros. Take a look at Rashi. He says Chosav Vavsev Al Shir Yom Me'era. It's Chosav Vav. He says why? Because Wednesday's a bad day for because then children die of Oscar or croup or whatever. Okay. But yeah. But forget about that for a moment. Let's now Vahoyu Laosos, I would assume that the reason is because it's also Chasavav. You understand what I mean? Because what? I understand, but I assume he's basing himself on the same proof he had before. He doesn't have to repeat it. Before he said Chasavav, and over here it's also Chasavav. So he's going on the same, he doesn't have to mention it to you because he assumes you know you're following along with the point, with his deductions. You know what I mean? And if you take a look at Osos, which is mentioned in Yirmiyahu, it has a vav, and Osos also in Shemos has a vav. Okay? For instance, Shemos in Dalet Tes. It's with a vav. Okay? And I think it's without a vav. I assume that's what it means, because Osos is usually with a vav, just like Moros. Okay? Yeah. What Rashi is saying is like this, that the reason why, let's just use Ma'oros and Osos, the reason why it is Chasa, it means like this. He means to say like this. It means that the Ma'oros, the purpose, that there is a natural, the purpose of the Ma'oros, okay? By the way, Ram doesn't believe that it's the purpose of the Ma'oros, the function of the Ma'oros. The function of the Ma'oros is for man. It means to say that man is placed in a certain environment where it was already pre-programmed, the whole system of the way the universe should form itself, that man should be living in an environment where he has certain things that he needs. And part of those things are the stars, the main star that keeps the planet alive, the sun, and etc. Okay, so this is all programmed. Now, what Rashi is saying is like this. Rashi is saying that the natural law, you see, the natural law is beneficial, but the natural law also has a bad side to it. Because natural law can have conformity to what a person wants. A person likes to go to a beautiful place, away from the city, likes to go to the country, a beautiful place. But if a person really goes to these places, there are a lot of dangers there. You go to places that are less developed, like you go to a jungle, your life is in danger. So people say nature is beautiful. Nature really isn't that beautiful. There is great beauty in nature, but nature is also very dangerous. Okay? It's very harmful. There's a harmful aspect and there's a beneficial aspect. Man always tries to take that which is pleasurable to him and to eliminate the harmful aspect. Okay? But nature was created in a way where essentially for man on this planet he could use it essentially for his benefit. But there is also a harmful side to it, to the natural law. Okay? So what Rashi is saying is like this, basically. It's an interesting concept. Rashi is saying that God gave this message to man in the very way that he created these Ma'oros. Because what's more important than the Ma'oros? There's nothing more important than the Ma'oros. Without the sun, we're gone. So the Ma'oros are the most important. The Ma'oros are the most important elements in terms of this planet's existence. Okay? So Rashi is saying that God wanted that message to be given over to man that tomorrow is those things which nature affords you, pleasurable, beneficial kind of things, but there's another side to it that's harmful as well. And sometimes it can be very harmful. It could be catastrophic. It could be catastrophic. A man can get caught in something and suddenly he's gone. That's natural law. That's it. You don't have to recount any case. Everybody knows that this is a definite possibility. In modern times, it's more remote because most people don't venture into these type of places anymore. They stay, there's enough pleasure where they are. But certainly in the past, and even now, people that really, people get, lose their lives and become very harmed from nature. So nature can be catastrophic as well. So what Rashi is saying is that when God created the cycle and the system of the Ma'oros, the revolution of the planets, he especially programmed into that system what? Eclipses. Eclipses were programmed into the system, which means to say that you could have had a different system where there wouldn't be any eclipses. Okay? Alright? I'm not an astronomer. But he's saying there could have been a different system where the phenomenon of eclipses would not take place. Why didn't God choose that kind of a system? Be a more perfect system. An eclipse is an imperfection, because as Maxine said, you're impeding the function of the system of the Ma'oros. You see. So Chazal say that's why the Ma'oros are lacking. Missing a vav means it's not perfect. It's not perfect. Really not perfect, because eclipse is an imperfection, and it could have been a system could have been devised by God which would eliminate eclipses, but he didn't do that. He especially programmed eclipses into the system. Why? To cause man to realize the fact, the danger, catastrophe. You see, imminent in nature, there's imminent catastrophe. That's what it means. An eclipse is a message that God gave through the Briyas HaOlam to man, that in nature, there's built in, as great as it is, but there's always built in an imminent catastrophic event that can occur to a person because of nature. Okay? So why? Why did God do that? Why should God give man such a message? Why not let man forget about it? The system could have been devised by God which would eliminate eclipses. But he didn't do that. He especially programmed eclipses into the system. Why? To cause man to realize the fact, the danger, catastrophe. You see? Imminent in nature, there's imminent catastrophe. That's what it means. An eclipse is a message that God gave through the Briyas HaOlam to man, that in nature there's built in, as great as it is, but there's always built in an imminent catastrophic event that can occur to a person because of nature. Okay? So why? Why did God do that? Why should God give man such a message? Why not let man forget about that? What does he have to learn this for? Make him depressed. You want to make him happy, right? Chazal say God was Mesameach Adam Rishon. He wanted to be happy. The whole system of Yahadus really is to give a person a happy life. I mean, that's really what the objective of Yahadus is. It's the happiest life, the best life. Okay? So why did God do that? So Rashi explains. Because he wanted man to be aware that there is such a thing as Hashgacha. And with Hashgacha, a person can live in a way that the catastrophes of nature will not affect him. He can rise above the natural catastrophe through closeness to the Creator himself. Closeness to the Creator takes you past the natural law, and your existence is more real. And since your existence is more real, you are saved from the catastrophe of nature. That's why in creation and in the planetary system was programmed the eclipse. That's the message of the eclipse. That's really what the Chazal is teaching us. It means to say that do not think, two things. First of all, it teaches them, do not think that God could not have created a system in which there's no eclipse. He could have done that. And it was intentional that it was intentionally done. It was intentionally done. And how do you know it was intentionally done? What's the right from the Pasuk? The right from the Pasuk is the missing Vav. That's the missing Vav. The missing Vav means he created them Aras but lacking, in a way that they're lacking. Why? To teach man an idea that Hashgacha can override the natural law. That's basically the concept. But basically that's what he's saying. The message he's saying is the same. See? Me'osos ha-shamayim al-techotu ba'soschem ritzon ha-kadosh baruch hu ein atem tzrichem lidog min ha-puranos. That's what he's saying though. In other words, if you do ritzon Hashem, means you're living on a higher level, then you don't have to worry about the, you don't have to worry about the catastrophe. You don't have to worry about the catastrophe. That's what he means. You understand? He doesn't mean, of course, if a person does Ratzon Hashem, what is he saying? If you do Ratzon Hashem, you don't have to worry about punishment? Of course not. You don't have to tell me that. I didn't do anything wrong. But he means Puranius. Puranius sometimes means punishment. Sometimes Puranius means just an evil. An evil that happens because of nature, natural law. That's also called Puranius. So that's what he's saying. That if you live according to God's will, then you are removed from the natural catastrophe. He doesn't mean you understand? It's absurd to say he means you're removed from punishment, because of course, if you do the right thing, well, there's no room for punishment. So what it means is the natural catastrophe. That's something which you can't avoid, it would seem. So that's what he's saying. That's the message of Yirmiyahu, he's explaining, you know, as Yirmiyahu, he says, is explaining the Pasuk in Bereshit, basically. Saying the same thing. Saying, Me'osos ha-shamayim al techatu, meaning to say that if you live according to the true way of life, then you're removed from the natural catastrophe. Okay? The only thing that, as I said, the only thing that I can't explain is what is it raya from the Pasuk? Because the Pasuk seems to be straight, just saying, just a denial of all these kind of attributing any kind of mystical powers to the heavenly bodies. That's the overt meaning of the Pasuk. So where does he see from that Pasuk as well? The other idea. I don't know how he deduces it from the Pasuk, but that's, okay, that problem, I don't know the solution to that problem. The idea is clear. He's saying the same idea that we're mentioning. What do I mean? The thing that comes to my mind is the Pasuk in Koheles, where it says that our lives kadogim, kadogim ha-metzudim, yon to the net, asher yovo aleihem areshes pison. What does it mean? It means to say, suddenly a person's taken away. A person can be striving all his life for something and become successful, suddenly dies in an airplane crash. Just at the moment, sudden death, you see, taken away in a split second. So that's catastrophe. That's osos ha-shamayim. See, the emphasis, Shlomo HaMelech in that pasuk, he talks about the fact that you die in other pasukim. But that pasuk is a very special pasuk. Of course, as the Rav said, the Rav one time quoted that pasuk, he says, what word do you have to underline in that pasuk? Okay? What word do you have to underline in that pasuk? Exactly, pison. That's the answer. Sudden death, sudden catastrophe. Catastrophe comes swift and sudden. A person could feel secure, successful, finally got to where he wants to be in life, and sudden tragedy is just taken away. Gone. So that's osos ha-shamayim. That's osos ha-shamayim. Osos ha-shamayim is pretty sudden too. The sun was shining a little short while ago, and right now it's pitch black. Very quick. You see, it means that that was created in nature to remind man about the fact that in his life this is a reality. But there's a way a person can live a life that's above that, and that is through Hashgacha, means the way he relates to the creator of the universe behind the natural law. If the relationship is closer to God himself, then the natural law is subordinated to his existence. Okay? That's what it's saying, basically. Yeah. I mean, what Ellie's asking is that the eclipse only shows one aspect, which is the tragedy, right? A sudden tragedy. It doesn't show you the fact that the Ashgacha, that the Ashgacha redeems you, so to speak. The Ashgacha can cause you to rise above it. It could. Let me let your question go from there. It's a good question. But I'm just thinking that it could be the Raya from Yirmiyahu. Just go back to that. Raya from Yirmiyahu is because he only mentions the Osos HaShemayim. It's true, Osos HaShemayim is an important thing in primitive man. If you study primitive man, you say that was an important thing. But that wasn't the only thing that was important. They had other kinds of things that were not Osos HaShemayim. There were the Shemayim itself. I mean, they worshipped the sun. They worshipped the moon. They worshipped the heavenly bodies, the zodiac, the constellations. So why did Yumio single out the Osos HaShemayim when he was trying to refute the position of the rest of the world? Okay? So it could be that's what Rashi means. That he singles out Osos because he wanted to give that other the other message as well. He shouldn't... one is that don't be taken in by the primitive nonsensical. Okay, that's all Gayim. And the second thing is, by the fact that he singled out the Osos, which is a reference to the Osos in Sheish Mebrachis, which means the eclipses, that was because he was trying to remind them of another thing, namely, that they should strive to be under the Ashgacha. In other words, his message was a two-level message. First of all, he says you have to remove yourself from the primitive, and you have to recognize natural law. But then you have to recognize, if that's all you're going to recognize, then you're going to still be in trouble because of sudden catastrophe. So he says, therefore, you must go one step higher and strive to be in line with the Ashgacha. You see? That's what Rashi is saying, basically. So he's saying, but one part of the message was overt, because that was his main thing. But there was a covert part of his message, which a Chacham will be able to see and direct to Chacham. But for the average person, the message was simply to remove yourself from the primitive Avodah Zarah. Okay? That I think could be Rashi's writer from that. You could say the only thing that could be demonstrated, the only thing that's possible to demonstrate is the catastrophic aspect. And it's impossible to demonstrate anything more, and the rest you have to learn Torah to know. It's possible. It's possible to say that. But I was thinking maybe you could even say a little more. You see, there's a difference. When we use the term nature, we don't mean the same thing that Goyim mean when they say nature, okay? Because when Goyim say nature, they're trying to evade, the term nature that's used in science is an attempt to evade a philosophical question. Like, you understand what I'm saying? Because they don't want to get into philosophy, and they don't want to talk about God, because they recognize that's philosophy. So they set up a word, nature, which means simply everything we see up to a certain point, which seems to follow a periodicity, it's a periodic, okay, you understand? That's what they're trying to say. Basically, what they're trying to say is the way we see things without thinking about the idea of a God. Okay, they're trying to be scientific. Of course, Yehudas maintains that that's an impossibility. You can't just take one part, you can't just say, I'm just going to go this far, and that's it. And the rest is... it's something you can do if you want to create a subject. You can always take a part of reality and say, well, we'll isolate this and we'll study it. But when you say nature, nature is really a bad term. Because in nature, you're really positing a philosophy when you're trying not to. Because the moment you say nature, what are you saying? You're saying it's not ascribable to any being. And that's what you're trying to say. But now you're getting into a philosophy. Do you know that? I mean, does it make sense? Okay? So nature is really a misnomer. It's a very bad term. It's an attempt to avoid a philosophical point, but at the same time, you're positing a certain kind of philosophy because you're implying that these things just exist by themselves for some reason. You have no right to do that, you know? So the term is a corrupt term, but they have no choice. The guy have no choice. But we do have a choice. So what we call nature or teva, what do we mean by nature when we say nature? What do we mean by nature? When we say teva, we have a word, teva? I mean, what Adam Richard said? Derech Olam was that. Derech Olam. what do we mean by, we have similar terms, derech olam, teva. I mean, what do we mean by these terms? And how is that distinguished from the term nature? What's the answer? See, the word nature that they're using is really a wishful term. I wish I could talk about this without talking about philosophy, so this is the term. Okay? You really can't, because either you're going to say there's a God behind it, or you're going to say there's no God, but whatever you're going to say, you know, you're going to have to posit, you're getting into a philosophical area. So you have to invent the term that somehow or other, you're saying we'll use this. I don't want to get into this, okay? But unfortunately, of course, the term itself carries a lot of weight to the unanalytical mind, and most people just get taken in as a nature, as if it makes sense to say that there's just something out there. We don't have to trace this and look any further, and that's it. Okay, it's not a question, not a philosophical question. Right? But what do we have? We can't say that. What is Yadus? Yadus does have an idea of nature. Chukos Hashemayim Va'aretz, the Navi says. Okay, the laws of nature. What? Causality. Well, who's that? That's Ashgach Koritz. That's it. Ashgach Koritz. That's the term. In other words, what we call it is Ashgach Kolius. In other words, it's also Ashgach. Right? It's also Ashgach. But it's Ashgach Kolius, which means to say that everything we see is a result of God's will, but God's will works on two frameworks. There's one will, which is for the general framework of mankind, all of mankind, the planet and the whole universe. I mean, alright, the Rambam says the rest of the universe really has nothing to do with us. Okay, I'm not going to argue with the Rambam. But the fact is, a certain part of the universe, the Rambam says, was programmed for man. The part that we live in, a small part, but it was created intentionally for man. So, what do we call that? Hashgacha Kolius. But it's also Hashgacha. And I often say that people think that if you say Hashgacha Kolius, that's it, you're away from God. That's not true. And Marshall, if a person made a beautiful garden for people to go into, to enjoy, and not for anybody in specific, but for people in general, and somebody went in there, he wouldn't owe a thank you to the person, because it wasn't specific. Absolutely not. It's general. So Ashgacha Kolius, we also are chayav in Shevach Hodah. Okay? So Ashgacha Kolius, we're part of the klal. Insofar as you're part of the klal, I mean, you're chayav. Right? People forget that because they're so egocentric that unless it's them in specific, that doesn't register. You know what I mean? They can't rise above their egocentricity. But if you can, you're chayav in Shevach Hodah. So it could be, to answer Ellie's question, what it means is like this: by Elikia Sama Oros, at first, it's a frightening thing because you're losing something which is essential for your existence. But then, as time goes on, like Adam Marisha saw, you see, it's only a temporary thing, and the light comes back. So what do you see from that? You see, there's Ashgacha Kolius that was intended to retain, you understand, your existence, to sustain your existence. So the Ashgacha Kolius brings to mind the idea one step further of Ashgacha Pratius. You see, it does reflect Ashgacha. Can't reflect, you're right, in nature you can't reflect Ashgacha Pratius, it's impossible. But you can reflect the generic concept, which is what? Hashgacha. That idea is there. Okay, the idea of Hashgacha is there. But you can't get to Pratis, but you can get to the idea of Hashgacha. Okay. The Kuzari it's in the beginning, page 55 in the paperback edition. Okay, and it's number 76. Where he's talking about nature, all I could see is that they have misled us by these names, meaning the names like nature, and caused us to place another being on a par with God if we say that nature is wise and active. That's exactly what is done today. It's no difference. It's exactly the same thing. Speaking in their sense, we might even say possessed of intelligence. So then he says, the rabbi says,
Okay, so rather than certainly, but the elements, the moon, the sun, the stars, have powers such as warming, cooling, moistening, drying, but do not merit that wisdom should be ascribed to them or be reckoned more than a function. Okay, that's exactly what he says. There is no harm calling the power which arranges matter by means of heat and cooling nature, but all intelligence must be denied it, meaning to say that you can't look at it as a force, as a force. Okay, you know, but when they say nature, people, in their minds, they really start thinking, oh, it's just nature. There's some kind of a force there. That's great. Yeah, an independent kind of existence. Exactly. Exactly. That's good.